and welcome to another episode of What You Doin' Podcast. My name is Matt. Thank you so much for coming back and checking it out. Today I'm sitting down to talk to Megan Cross about her tabletop game, Oh Patron Mine. Now, due to some delays, this project actually just finished its round on Kickstarter, but I'm happy to announce it was fully funded well above its goal. It will be seeing print and digital release. I want to thank Megan so much for sitting down and chatting with me about her incredible game. And as always, all the links to everything will be in the show notes. Please go check it out. Please go pick it up. It's an amazing sounding game. I know I haven't described it, but I'll let Megan do that very soon here in the episode. With that, let's get into it. So how are you doing? How's the snow?
It's now rain, which is worse. Mm. Like, it snowed all night and now it's like freezing rain. So everything is just like so slick.
Cool.
Which is super great and conducive for existing. But luckily I did everything I needed to do outside the house yesterday. So I'm set up for a day of playing video games, if I'm being honest with myself.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. What are you playing? What are you excited about?
Right now I'm on my second playthrough of Veilguard. And I started like a fourth or fifth playthrough of Dragon Age 2, but now I want to play Inquisition. It's Dragon Age. In some iteration, it's Dragon Age.
I love it.
Yeah. So that's been like my like active like wanting to play, but that would require me taking over the PlayStation from my spouse, who's been playing Stellar Blade for the past like. He's been playing it for a couple weeks, but like he played it all day yesterday. Or stealing my girlfriend's Steam Deck so I can play Dragon Age on that.
That's why we have two TVs.
We have multiple TVs, but we only have one PS5. So
I'm very lucky in that my partner is a much more casual gamer.
Mm.
But is interested in some video games. So like I've been playing Indiana Jones and she's been like, I want you to play that. That's fair. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I
love Indiana Jones. So like love Indiana Jones.
Yeah. And I was like, you know, when it was coming out, I was like, yeah, it's first person and you know, you do puzzles and stuff. And she was like, okay, I'll watch you do that. And then we, you know, played it the first night and she was like, okay, this is pretty cool.
So yeah, I definitely have to check that out. I know if I'm playing my Switch, I've been playing Dorf Romantic, which is like such a good mindless.
Mm-hmm.
Fun game. And then Amber Isles just came out for Switch, so my girlfriend's been playing that too, because Animal Crossing but dinosaurs.
Oh so, yeah.
We're all over the place. Like there's actively like six or seven different games. It's just a matter of which console we want to be playing it on.
That's how it goes, though, is, you know, you get excited about different things and you're like, well, this doesn't excite me, so let me start playing this. And then you play it for one day.
Exactly. Like, I'll get it in my head that it's like, this is the only game I want to play right now. And then, like, by the time I, like, finally, like, get it loaded on play, I'm like, maybe I don't want to play this after, like, the hours it took me to, like, figure out what I'm playing. I'm like,
stare at all of these games for 2 hours and no, I don't have time. I gotta clean the kitchen like I said I was going to.
No, I did that already. That's what I did this morning. I made breakfast and I put dinner in the crock pot and then I have this. And then after this, I do have to put my laundry away, but we'll see if that happens.
Great. that sounds fantastic. I love this for you. I've got a couple chores I gotta do. I gotta clean the kitchen. I've been slammed with interviews and stuff. Mm. And so it's one of those things where it's like, okay, I'm going to clean just enough so that we can keep cooking and eating. And then there's just that background stuff that doesn't get clean. And I'm just like, okay, that's enough. It's Sunday. I'm going to clean it. I've got some house chores I got to do. I got to put it. It's too far away or I would show it because I'm a child and want to show my shiny new thing. I bought a Wii U off Marketplace yesterday that I'm going to hook up to the TV and like
it. So my spouse and I are console collectors. We have every console basically ever except for a SNES, but we have like the little SNES that they made. But he recently pulled the Wii U out again and has been playing Captain Toad.
Captain Toad, and
it's such a cool game. Like, so, like, it didn't get a lot of gameplay like when I first bought it for him, and he's just been like randomly just like, you know what, I really want to play Captain Toad. Like, okay,
all right, dog.
I'm like, you can also play that without using the TV, so it's like he can play that.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody can play on the TV. But yeah, we have the Wind Waker Wii U, so like the little pad has like all the fancy pants stuff around the outside. But I mean, the Wii U walked so that the Switch could run, and I don't know why people like dunk on the Wii U. Like, it's not a bad system.
No, I think there's a lot of stuff that is wrapped up in that era of gaming that led to the Switch. Like, the thing I always say is the Vita walked so the Switch could run. Because like, if you take the longer view at it, like, obviously if you're just looking at Nintendo systems, like, yeah, it's there's right. so much of the design of the Switch that like you look definitely. At the Wii U, you're like, oh wow, I see exactly how we got to the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, honestly, I was telling my partner, I was like, after looking at the Wii U and looking at the tech behind it and how it's all set up and stuff, I'm like, going to the Wii U to the Switch, I'm like it's cowardice. They took a step backwards. I'm like, they were too safe. I'm like, you gave me a really amazing like two screen experience. You gave me a lot of interesting technology between having like a touch screen and a thing that I can carry around. And then you were just like, but what if that was it? And I was like, no,
that's a Game Boy.
Yeah. You gave me a slightly better Game Boy.
I have a Switch Lite because like that's all that I need, and then both of my partners have a full Switch. I just need the Lite. Like, that's all I need.
It's
like, yeah, but we all play it handheld anyway. Like, we very rarely put it on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
So like, yeah, it's just a big Game Boy.
I never play mine handheld. Which is so funny, because like I played I have so many DSs, I played so many DS games, like I love handheld systems, but then there's something about the Switch that just doesn't excite me. It's on the TV, it's a TV console.
Yeah,
it's weird.
I think it would be played on the TV more if like the Switch is like a pass for somebody else to play the PS5 or the Xbox One is generally how it goes. So it's like, it's nice that you can play it handheld because then somebody else can monopolize the TV. But they all have their merits. I mean, like, I've been a PlayStation kid my entire life. So like, that's where my heart is, mostly because my parents wouldn't buy me Nintendo systems because my cousin had them all. So like, I was just like, I'm just a PlayStation kid.
I like the parent math there of like, well, they already have it, so let's get you the different one.
Well, that's what it was. My next door neighbor had a Sega Genesis, and my cousin had an N64. So we got a PlayStation, and we weren't allowed to get anything else.
It's good. Listen, it's good thinking.
If I wanted to play them, I can go over there.
Yeah, that's community building.
But then, when I was an adult, I'm like, I'm not dating anybody unless they have a Sega Genesis, because all I wanted my whole life is a Sega Genesis. And then I met my husband who had a Sega Genesis and an N64, and I'm like,
locked.
Like, all my friends said that my standards were too high.
I won't date anyone unless they have a Sega Genesis is incredible. You know, talk about knowing what you want. I love it.
Yeah, right?
Listen, you shouldn't, it wasn't 2025 then, but it's 2025 now. You shouldn't settle for anything less than what you want. And if what you want is your partner to have a Sega Genesis, stand by it. Live your truth.
Stand by it. Or be prepared to buy them a Sega Genesis.
That actually would be very funny. That's some weird, like, I'm getting around the witch's curse thing, where it's like, the person you love must own a Sega Genesis. And you're like, how am I going to? And you're like, you know what I can do?
You know what I could do?
Merry Christmas. Hey. That's 5D chess right there. I love that. So this is usually the point in the interview where I go, hey, this is the podcast. So hi, everybody. Welcome to What You Doin'. I'm talking with Megan Cross today about O Patron Mine. First of all, we're do a little intro. But Megan, congrats on funding. O Patron Mine fully funded, more than 200% funded when last I looked.
Yeah. Yes. We're 215 right now, which is absolutely mind-boggling.
It's exciting. It's very exciting to see all of the projects that I've been seeing people talk about, and all the projects I've been talking about people with, like, fund solidly early. You know, clear that line nice and early. And then you just have the eternal stress of waiting those 27 days that it doesn't all crash and burn.
Exactly. Yeah. It really helps the stamina when you fund quickly. You're like, okay, now I can maintain. Now I just have to maintain it for the rest of the campaign rather than just like push the whole time. It was like, all right, like we got it. Now we can just maintain course.
just 3 weeks of, oh God. Okay, here we go.
Yeah. Initially I was like, oh, what if I just do like a 2 week campaign? Cause I know, like Spencer Campbell from Giel RPGs always does 2 week campaigns. And I'm like, do I have the belief in myself that I could do it in 2 weeks? And I was so worried that this one like wasn't going to fund at all. And then it funded on the first day. And I'm like, I should have done 2 weeks.
Damn it.
Now I'm in this for a month. But it'll be good because the more.
Yeah. Hello, Mr. Kickstarter. Can we change this? Can we just tighten this up?
Because like there's nothing to be upset about with more people getting their eyes on it and getting the chance to jump in before it closes. But the month of marketing and self-promotion is real hard with crippling imposter syndrome in the fear that I'm being annoying.
We will come back to that, but I want to make sure. Give you a little intro to introduce yourself, you know, in your own words, describe who you are, what you do, and what we're here to talk about.
Yeah, so I am and will continue to be Megan Cross. You can find me most places. You can find a person on the internet at Megan Lynn FTW. I am an indie game designer and writer. And I write mainly jamless games, so a lot of solo games, a lot of story narrative focused games, and I also like to write shitpost games in between writing the poignant make you cry games. I like to write silly games based on puns.
It's all part of a balanced diet.
The duality of man. Exactly.
Yeah, it's like, all part of a balanced diet.
It's like a little snack.
You know, sometimes you make a game about, you know, the tender and tragic love between two, you know, star-crossed lovers, and then you write a game about three goblins in a trench coat, and that's great. Yeah. That's great for everybody.
Exactly. And it's been really great. Like, the more I get into writing like the silly nonsense games, like it lets me kind of release the reins a little bit and like the need to constantly make like very polished, perfect things. It's like, no, I can just make garbage sometimes and people will like it. As long as I like it, that's all that matters. Like, I'm fulfilled if I am enjoying what I'm writing.
That's the thing I've come away with from talking to a lot of people about that, is just like, make something that makes you happy. Mm-hmm. And people will enjoy it, you know? So it will find its audience if you make a thing that you're happy with and you enjoy. It will find the people that enjoy it.
Exactly.
Imposter syndrome. I think it's a very funny place to start. No one ever seems to feel like they've got it. Is a thing that I'm learning. No one, regardless of who they are, never seems like they're like, I did it. I made it.
No. Yeah. Like, I have moments where like I'll read something that I wrote and be like, oh, I killed that. Like, that was good. But largely, it's just me treading water And when people mention me or my work or say something nice about something I made, I'm just like, me? me? And then
is there another one?
Yeah, there must be somebody else that has my name and wrote something with the same name as what I wrote, because they can't possibly be talking about me.
That's how you find your doppelganger.
Yes. But at a certain point, I've gotten a little better, because at a certain point you do need to admit to yourself that, like, there's a reason, like, that you make cool things. Mm-hmm. Even if it takes several years of people telling you you make cool things to be like, okay, maybe I'm okay at this.
Yeah, I will accept I'm all right. Let's not.
Yeah, I will accept that maybe I'm okay at writing games. And that has been like 6 years in the making for me to be like, maybe I'm okay at this. But, you know, yeah, it doesn't matter who you are. Nobody thinks that they've got things figured out, or that, like, people know who they are. Like, when I hear somebody that, like, I admire, like, mention something or be like, oh yeah, like, I've heard of you, I'm like, how?
Who told you? Like, what did they, like, do?
It's existing in the Venn diagram between needing validation but terrified of being perceived. Mm-hmm. Is kind of where I lay as a creator. Like, I want to hear that people play my games and, like, think I make cool things, but also I'm terrified of being known. I desperately want to be known, but I'm also terrified.
You need a body double. You need, what's the TTRPG designer equivalent of a VTuber?
Yeah.
Because that's what you need someone else. You need, like, a different physical perception, so when people go, oh yeah, yeah, look, that, you're like, that person did it. Yes, that's great. They're great. You're absolutely right. Who am I? Don't worry about it.
Be like, no. Yeah,
no, we worried about it.
You want them.
Yeah, just the Milli Vanilli of TTRPG design.
Yeah, I just need somebody confident to go up there and lip sync all of my designs.
That would be hilarious.
I'll just Hannah Montana it. Like, yeah. I'll just get a blonde wig.
Like, yeah, listen, this would be an incredible, like, postmodern, like, weird esoteric, like, this would be incredible. This would be the wildest thing. For 2 years I pretended to be a completely different person and release games. some live stream for charity is just like, it was Megan the whole time. That's one of the stupidest thoughts I've ever had, but that's so funny.
Stupid thoughts need love too.
So let's talk about let's talk about O Patron Mine.
Yeah.
It's a solo. Well, it can be a solo game.
Yes.
It is tarot based, and I'm wondering. So let me ask you, why, as a person who's made a couple. Mm-hmm. What drew you to using tarot over using just a normal deck of cards? Because I have some ideas, but I imagine you'll hit me with something I didn't even think about.
Yeah. So O Patron Mine in particular, O Patron Mine started like, all right, let me get my words together.
we've got to put the timeline together.
I've wanted to write one for the Warlocks for a long time. I have always been a Warlock lover. It's pretty much the only class I play when I did play D&D, which I haven't played for a little while.
It's the best class. That's fair.
It is the best class.
It's the best class.
100% the best class. So this game in particular started from my dissatisfaction with how Wizards handles Warlocks as a class in regards to the patron aspect of it, because Warlocks have, and I will argue to the death, the coolest backstory possibilities of any character class, because it's built in. Like, there's a built-in relationship between this patron and between the Warlock. And then the player's handbook is kind of like, yep, pick one and then you're on your way. Mm-hmm. Like, and I want more. Like, I wanted more. I wanted.
You signed a contract with Cthulhu, whatever. Pick your feet.
It's like, but why? Like, but why? What are the terms? What, like, how did this happen? Like, I wanted more. So my initial thing was, I'm just going to make a bunch of cool warlock patrons because I'm tired of how boring the warlock patrons are in the player's handbook. So I'm going to make warlock patrons. And then that became, what if I made warlock patrons that were inspired by the major arcana of the tarot? Because there's so much really cool lore, for lack of a better term, like surrounding like imagery that is associated with the tarot and with the major arcana. Like I basically approached it with, what if this card was a person standing in front of you? Like, based on the meaning and like the meaning of that card, like, what would they look like? Where would they hang out? Like, what would they want in exchange for power? Like, that kind of thing. And as I started thinking about that, I was like, I don't want this to just be something that exists just for, I mean, not that it would have been if it had stayed this way. Had it, it would be exclusively D&D, but I'm like, I don't even play D&D anymore because I'm largely dissatisfied with a lot of aspects of it. But that doesn't mean that warlocks don't deserve to have really cool patrons and a way to make really cool fleshed out backstories. But I was like, what if this is still tarot inspired, like heavily tarot inspired, heavily tarot based. And what if it was its own game? And that kind of spun from there with making it almost like, I've been describing it in some ways as like a game, like a ritual-esque thing, because it's played by drawing a 3-card spread and you use those cards to determine the different aspects of the patron and the meeting and the pact that they enter into. And it's designed in a way that it can be played on its own. Like, you can play it on your own as like a really cool, just quick journaling game to create this cool clandestine meeting and develop this pact between these two, between this human and this otherworldly entity, and kind of create the patron, create their meeting, create the terms of their contract, and just make it a cool sit down, quick play solo journaling game. But I also wanted to write it in a way that opens up the possibility that you could take, that you could use this game as a means of creating a backstory for a larger game, not specifically D&D, any game, any TTRPG that has that kind of relationship between something powerful and someone mundane, you could use to create that relationship and to create that backstory. So that was kind of twofold what my goals were. And the tarot led me to that point from me initially just saying, I'm going to make some tarot inspired patrons. It then spun into like, what if I leaned even more into tarot, like by means of play, and really dug into the meanings of these cards and the imagery associated with these cards, and then make them into these entities that you can encounter. Yeah. And also, tarot cards are fun and prettier than a regular deck of cards.
My partner and I have been starting to get interested in you know, solo play or, you know, two player sort of duo narrative games, journaling stuff. We specifically, there's a big like book outlet near us once a month. And we were like, okay, we're going to go to the book outlet and we're going to see, cause they always have tarot decks. And we're like, we're going to see what they have and we're going to see which one like sparks our interest. And we're going to get one specifically for games. We're going to get one. We're going to set aside. That's going to be our game one. And then we spent like an hour and a half. and so it's just, it always interests me when people you know, when designers choose tarot over cards, over dice, over whatever, because it's a conscious choice every time. You know, it's, you didn't just you didn't just wake up and say, "Nah, it's gonna be tarot," because meh. You know, you know, like you, even you said it, it, you came to using tarot not even as a design thing, but more of like, I want to keep this vibe that I was thinking. And so we'll use tarot to keep that vibe.
Exactly. Yeah. It kind of, yeah. Tarot kind of decided for me that that was going to be. And a lot of times that's how it happens, at least with me, is that like, I just kind of wait around for the game to tell me what it wants to be. And then I go from there. But it was very clear to me, like from the jump, like as I realized what O Patron Mine was becoming, like there was no other way that I could present this game in the way that I wanted to without it being tarot.
Is that how you know, your design has gone with previous games, where you maybe have like the seed of an idea and then ideas sort of jump out at you? Or
more or less, I am a very narrative game designer. I am a horrible mechanic designer. I would say I should give myself a little more credit because I have done some what I think are pretty cool mechanics. However, it is not my strong suit. It's always where I struggle if I know that a game does need some kind of mechanic to it. That's not just like I am a prompt based, like cards and prompts are my bread and butter. It's where I'm comfortable. It's the kind of games that I love writing. But a lot of times when I know that a game isn't that, like when I know that a game isn't prompts and cards, I write around mechanics, and a lot of times it just kind of like reveals, like something clicks eventually. And I'm like, that's what this needs. I think the only game where I had the mechanic before anything else was Hunter Hunted, was the first game I ever wrote where I knew what the mechanic was before anything else. I was like, this is the mechanic, and now I need to build a game around it. It is 99% the other way around at all times.
Well, I guess that makes sense, because you're like, okay, here's the before. And then something happens. And then here's what the outcomes are.
Yep.
And I guess, and it makes sense that like if you design both sides of it, you have a clear idea of where you want to end up. You know, you can start to build the ideas of how you get from A to C.
Yeah, because a lot of it is usually, how do I want the players to feel? How do I want, like, the game to progress, and then what can I use to elicit that emotion and facilitate that movement from point A to point whatever? Like, what does that bridge look like? And it's so much easier to do that when you know what you are trying to do. And that's a lot of times the only way I can really get like cool mechanics out of things, is I need to have very, very clear in my head exactly what I want the game to do and how I want the players to feel while they are playing it, and then putting the pieces together to get to that point from the start. I wouldn't, I never claim to have a design process, but that's probably as close as I get to having one.
I have this image of you in front of a whiteboard, and on one side it says like lovers, and on the other side it says sad, and then in the middle is a big question mark, and you're like,
question mark. It's not unlike that. Like, a lot of my work in progress docs, like I'll leave notes to myself like in all caps, and it'll just be like, something happened, like some insert mechanic here, and then I go back to read it and I'm like, thanks.
Thanks. That's me. Very great. Helpful. Could have done. Yeah. Cool. I love that. Great.
Thanks, Past Megan. You're a big help.
just constantly, constantly mad at yourself for like, you could have designed this for me. You could have made this mm-hmm. easier for me and you chose not.
Yeah. To. Like sometimes Past Megan is very nice and I'll read something and I'm like, wow, like I forgot all about that. I really popped off. And then I'll like read something that's just like, it'll just be like, flavor text goes here, which is my least favorite part of design. I am so bad at writing flavor text. And I'm just, and it's always any doc before it's finished is just like peppered with all caps, flavor text goes here. And I'm like, man, I really wish I had written this already.
I'm gonna make a game design doc and I'm just gonna put in brackets, all caps, design the game, and then forget about it for 2 years and be like, oh, damn.
Yeah. That's game design, baby.
It does feel the more and more I talk to game designers, it's funny how we talked about like how important shitpost games are. It's so funny how the more you learn about a process, the more that the shitpost jokes in that community are like, oh no, this is real. This is real. The reason this is a shitpost joke is because everyone does this. And mm-hmm. it's more of the like, yeah, you know, that thing we all do than anything else. It's so funny.
Yeah. Like I know my process, inverted commas, is very all over the place. Like I am not an organized designer by any means. Like I sit down and I have a notebook. I do all of my game design on pen and paper because that's the only way I can think. Mm-hmm. And I just write stream of consciousness, whatever's in my head about this game, even though it'll make no sense to me later. And then I kind of piece it together from there. And then I'll hear game designers talking about like ludonarrative dissonance and like game design theory and stuff. I'm like, I am so out of my league with like real design, quote unquote, real game designers who like study things and know. Thing I'm just like, oh, like I could, like anything that Vincent Baker ever posts about game design, I'm just like eating it up because him and McGay are both so good at what they do. And I'm like, my brain never thinks like that, but I am in awe of the people whose brains do think like that mm-hmm. when it comes to game design. But I mean, as long as the game gets written. Mm-hmm. As long as the game is written, then you're doing it. You're doing something right.
And I think sometimes to be kind to dear Megan and others, I think sometimes the people who you know, quote unquote, like think a lot about it they're thinking about it and putting words to things that people who don't think about games a lot like feel, or they're, you know, they're putting words explanations to vibes. You know, where it's like, oh, it's the reason this and this happens is because this and this and this and this and this and this. And you're like, oh, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. Okay.
And that sounds better than me just being like, I vomit on a page until a game comes out.
Which you just like haggard and sweaty, like a, you know, like a prophet, just like, oh, dice, cards, the moon.
Yep. It just, yeah, it's like I'm just a prophet receiving messages from an angry god. Yeah. And sometimes for better, sometimes for worse. It depends. It all depends. But, yeah. To loop it back around, Oh Patron Mine was something that it really fell into place on its own. Mm-hmm. I feel like the mechanic. Once again, inverted commas, mechanic, was like just right there. Like as soon as I knew that it was going to be more than just a list of patrons, like everything came together, at least as far as like the game structure, everything came together very, very quickly. I knew exactly what I wanted it to be. The actual writing of it became the harder part. Because scope creep is a hell of a thing, and I went to being like, I'm going to design 22 unique patrons. came into like, what if there's a unique prompt for all 22 cards dependent on what position they were drawn in? So 22 prompts became 66 prompts. Mm-hmm. Most of them with 3 to 4 follow-up prompts after the main one.
Yeah, so, you know, just like 250 unique things to write.
Yeah, like, NBD. It's fine. It's fine. But thankfully for me, I had in my corner my wonderful friend Emma, who has been practicing tarot for over a decade and knows so much more, has probably forgotten more than I know about tarot, and she agreed to consult and just like look over things as I wrote them, just to make sure that I was understanding things correctly, or if I like was capturing the vibe correctly and interpreting the cards right, because I read a lot of on tarot and like interpreting the tarot stuff, but that pales in comparison to like having done it for over 10 years and like being so familiar with the cards. So like the best compliment I could get when I like went in and saw like she had commented on the doc would be like, this is a perfect, like this perfectly encapsulates like the vibe of this card. I'm like, yes. and then sometimes she'd be like, this is like a little base level or like a little reductive, like try something with like maybe with like this imagery and keep in mind that like XYZ, to just kind of lead me. Like it was really a lot of like, you're on the right track, or you're kind of there, but it would be more interesting if you went this way. Which was a huge help, because while the first 10, 12 ones were pretty easy, like there are ones that have some pretty, I don't want to say obvious, but like more well-known meaning and imagery associated with them. There are some that you get to and you're like, what do I do with this? And there isn't an option to just not have it.
Take all the tarot except for the lovers, just put yeah, that one to the side. I just decided
it came so easily, and then you get to like Temperance was really hard, the Hierophant was really hard, the Chariot was really hard, Wheel of Fortune was really hard. Like there are just some that
I had a Bellatro moment. Wow, you said Wheel of Fortune and my brain whew, that okay.
But then there are ones like Justice, Judgment, the Tower were ones that just came very easily, because those, like, I just understood those the imagery of them so much more strongly. But I think not to toot my own horn.
As I've told someone else, that's the point of the podcast. Toot away.
Toot. I really, really love this game. I love, like, every time I read through it and like look at the prompts, I'm like, this is just cool stuff. Like, you can make some really cool, weird little guys with it. And you can, we did the math last night when I was talking to the wonderful folks over at Sword and Key. They did the math for me, and you could play this game over 1500 times and never get the same exact patron combo, like the never the same, like, so. And that was my other goal, is just to make it like really, really replayable, so that I could just be a part of somebody's like gaming go bag. So like a GM could keep it with their stuff, and if they have a player that's like, oh, I really want to play a warlock, you can be like, here you go. Or if you're just like writer's blocky and want to do like a 30-minute writing practice, you can just pull it out. Oh, I'll show it. I've got my test prints here.
Ooh.
And they're very, very small, A6, very small little lad. And I love them. And
It was so funny that you held it to your face, like compared to one standard Megan.
It's like, standard Megan face. It's a little bit smaller than a standard Megan face. Beautiful layout by Caden Ramstack, who was absolutely a joy to work with. The cover is by my wonderful friend Mac, who did the cover of my game Sanctuary and Sentinel, which I love. Both of them were so wonderful and worked with what I would call an unhelpful amount of information from me in being, this is what the game is about, and I like the color purple. And both of them made absolute magic with nothing.
Purple, some stars.
Yeah, like, it's a game. Circles. Like, it's a, yeah, and they both made absolute magic with it. So I'm, like, I think I was, like I said in the beginning, like, I was super nervous about this funding because I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if it was something that would resonate with people as much as it resonated with me as a lover of Warlock and the lover of just, like, telling stories and, like, just, like, as a game, a backstory potential game. Like, I just wasn't sure, like, how that would resonate with folks. But I love it so much, and I'm like, I'm gonna try because I love this game. And apparently, more people than I thought also think it's pretty cool.
Hell yeah.
So
Warlock Gang Rise Up.
Yeah, so I'm super excited to know that it's funded and to know that I'm gonna be able to, like, get it out into folks' hands. Cause it's a really cool game. It's really cool. I feel confident enough, which is out of character for me, but it's a really cool game.
No, it's
you can make some
it's cool, super cool.
Some cool guys.
I love games that, well, I mean, that could be the end of the sentence. I am
controversial take.
Yeah, hot take. I like games. I'm enjoying this new trend. I guess it's not explicitly like a new trend, but it's probably, like, it's hard to say when something is a new trend. Or is it just increase in visibility for any number of reasons? Mm. You know, is it actually new, or is it just, oh, it's more visible and now I'm aware of it and it feels new? So I guess I'll say the trend that I'm noticing more is people designing games that are very, very focused around one small idea. You know, not here's this whole thing. You know, I think O Patron Mine is a great example of, like, it is to describe the relationship between, like you said, a mundane person and a powerful, you know, a incredibly powerful entity. And that's what it does. It does this small thing. And I'm really enjoying seeing a lot of people do that because I think, and, you know, talked about this in another interview, that focus, that limitation, that like this is what it is and this is what I'm going to do with it, like, it lets you do so much in the space, you know, and it really lets you hone in and focus on making that, the mechanics and stuff behind that idea, so evocative, just so impactful, that it's cool, you know. Not it's great to see, just like, oh yeah, not every game has to be like some big 200 page thing. Some games can just be 20-30 pages. Boom. There you go.
Yeah. And that's something that I've been learning over the past X amount of years that I've been designing games is, like, I'm a short form game designer. All of my game, I think my longest game is 50 pages maybe. And just the acceptance and understanding that, like, there is no such thing as a quote-unquote legitimate game designer, but, like, when I first started writing games, I'm like, unless I'm writing this big grand thing, like, I'm not actually a game designer. Which, no, if you've designed a game, you're a game designer, period.
Hot take.
But very hot take.
Yeah, actually very hot.
I will die on the hill, if you have designed a game, you are a game designer. It does not matter if it is a business card game. It does not matter if it's a 200 page book. If you have designed a game, you are a game designer. And I will tell you that confidently because it's taken me 5+ years to internalize it. So now I will tell anybody who is listening and doubting whether or not they are a game designer.
I think especially if you've done one of those small form, more restrictive types of games, you know, like not that you're more of a game designer, but if you're like, I'm not a game designer, I've only done like 3 business card games. And then I did a thing for that 36 word game jam. I'm like, no, you're definitely, you designed the hell out of whatever that little thing you did was.
I love business card games. Both, I've designed several business card games. And I also just love reading them because I am so wordy that working under those kind of constraints are so much harder for me. But like, as I approach game design now, that I feel like I'm settling into who I am as a designer and like understanding what it is that I enjoy doing and what it is that I do well. And yeah, like I want to make something that like may be niche, like it may not have a wide appeal in the eyes of our oppressive overlords, capitalism. But like, I would rather do something niche and just do the hell out of it. Like, I would rather make the best super niche game about a subject than make a lackluster 200 page book that's just like every other 200 page book. Like, I would rather do something small really well than make a whatever something big. And I think O Patron Mine is like a true like arrival at that. Is like, what do I want to do? Like, I want to make a game that explores the pact aspect of characters that enter into pacts with otherworldly beings. Like, I want to dig into the who, the where, the why of that relationship. And then I like threw myself at making a game that just does that. And I'm so proud of what's come out of it. And I think that's like a great, and I think I agree that I do see that more with just people saying like, this is what this game is about. And they just do it so well because they have focused in on like, this is what this game it does. And I think we could use more of that. Cause I think it, like when somebody finds your game and they were looking for exactly that thing, it'll resonate so much harder with your audience when you make something that is focused in. Which is hard to say in a world where like you want the broadest audience so that you can put food on your table and blah blah blah. Capitalism ruins everything. Blah blah blah. We all know that.
Yeah.
However, like make the self-indulgent thing. Like I wrote O Patron Mind because I wanted it to exist. And apparently other people did too, which is great. But even if nobody else but me wanted it to exist, I was still gonna make it exist. And that's how people, I feel like all designers should approach things like that. That like, I'm writing this because I want to.
If it
makes me money, great. Eating is fun. But
that was a thing I saw a lot of people talking about after David Lynch passed, was just like make your thing. Make it as weird as you want it to be. Don't worry about having to explain it, or don't worry about, I guess more specifically, don't worry if other people are going to understand it, I think is the better way to phrase that. Just make your thing, make it how you want it to be, and the people who it resonates with will resonate with it, you know, they will find their joy in it. And sometimes part of the joy of art, and I think kind of specifically what Lynch got at when he was talking a lot about it, was the things that are going to resonate with other people might not be the things that resonated with you explicitly when you made it. And it might not be mm-hmm. things that you even intended for them to resonate with. But, you know, all of us contain multitudes. Art means so many things to so many different people. And that's the fun of it.
Right.
You know, make the thing like, that you're excited about and other people will go, hey, look at that.
Exactly. I think the biggest ties into my mind immediately goes to like what enrages me so much about generative AI being used for art and writing and stuff. Like the doing of it is the fun part. Mm-hmm. Like the product, like the end result is cool and fun, but like doing it is where the joy is. Like creating something that only exists because you decided it needed to exist. Like that is fun. Like getting to just do something you love and create something cool. Like that's the joy in making art, in making games, in making, period. Like the frustration and the struggle that sometimes comes with it is part of it too. Like, because then when you're done and you come out on the other end, you have this cool thing that you've made and that other people will see and go, oh, that's a cool thing. Like, I also enjoy this cool thing you made. And that's why any of us do what we do. Like that's why any creator does what they do, is because there's joy in making a thing. Mm-hmm. And make it weird. Make weird art. Like, I think that was my biggest, like, the thing that I kept seeing, like, after, like you said, after David Lynch passed, was like, just make the weird thing that you want to make. Like, people will either get it or they don't, and who cares?
Yeah.
You do. Like, you get it. Like, just make something weird. Like, the world needs more weird art in whatever form art is for you as an artist. Like, just make weird stuff. Make a game about a bunch of weird little guys. Like, it's fine. Just do it.
As I've said, TTRPGs are all about, you know, being weird little guys.
Mm-hmm.
I said this very recently, chatting with Rowan from Rascals. Games are about being weird little guys.
Yeah.
And as I said in that interview, I'll say here speaking with you, and that is why Dylan will never be stopped. Because TTRPGs are always about being little guys, and Dylan is the best at being little guys.
And it would be to our detriment to attempt mm-hmm. to stop her.
No, why would you? How dare you? How dare you consider that you could?
No, nobody has that power. Nobody is that powerful. And that's where the joy is. Like, at the, like, writing games for me is, like I say, it's like my side hustle. But really, I do it because I love it. And it's something that I can do when I'm done working my 40 plus hour a week day job that mm-hmm. drains the life from me, is I can come home and like just create something really cool to help people make weird little guys.
So somebody can spend their work day thinking about how excited they are to go home and make their weird little guy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I think at the end of the day, that's why most people do what they do. At least that's why I do what I do, is I just want to help facilitate storytelling. Like, I want to write something, especially when it comes to a patron mind. Like, I wanted to write a game that somebody who has the desire to tell this kind of story, but can't just sit down and create it whole cloth. Like, I want something to help facilitate that storytelling, to just like unlock it, just to kind of like loosen the jar. Mm. Like, they can open the jar and tell the story, but like I just want to help a little bit. Like, I'll just loosen it so that you can just pop the top right off and go tell your story, be it just playing it on its own or telling a story that will then lead into something bigger, grander, all of that. Like, I just to help people tell stories and create characters is what I love to do with my games. And especially like Oh Patron Mine, I think, is like the culmination of me just really loving character creation games and really loving like story, like in just small, inclusive storytelling. Just like rapid fire storytelling. Because it does play very quick. Like you can play it in like half hour, 45 minutes, depending on how long you spend with the prompts. But it is a quick game, but the possibilities are high. Like you can play it again and again and again. And it won't ever be the same game twice, which I think is really cool.
That's the fun of, so you mentioned they did the math and it's like 1500 different combinations.
Yeah.
Card randomization, people don't realize, there was a mathematician, I just saw this the other day, that said if you do a proper riffle shuffle for a standard 52 card deck of playing cards, which I believe it was 10 riffle shuffles is correct, that it's truly randomized. Because of the amount of randomization in one single deck of cards, it is very likely that you've created a combination of cards that has never existed before in the universe.
That's so cool.
Right. And that's nutty. So cool. That's nutty. Like you think about all of the times decks of cards have been shuffled and all of this. And it's like, yeah, that's probably the first time that combination has existed. It's like, whoa. So we, you know, you talked about how O Patron Mind came about because you wanted to have this sort of fleshed out tool for Warlock backstories. And I thought that was such an interesting idea to, and this wasn't your initial idea, but I always find it very interesting when games are explicitly or implicitly designed to exist before a different game. Mm-hmm. And we see a couple of them, but this is the first one I've seen that's been more at the player level. Mm-hmm. You know, they're usually like, yeah, make a map or make a kingdom or, you know, design mm-hmm. the campaign setting or whatever. And this is like, this is your game. Like you mentioned like, oh, I love the idea of the GM having it in their bag. And I really like the idea of just like, okay, everyone's making their characters. All right, you have some homework. So you get on it. And then just like, all right, I'll see y'all in an hour.
Yeah. And there is a variation I have in here that if you are playing it like as a character creation for a longer campaign, if you don't want to play it solo, you can use it, play it with your GM, and instead of answering the prompts like as journaling exercise, you can use them to guide role-playing scenes where the GM will play the patron and the player plays their character, which then also includes the GM in on the character creation process, because in a greater campaign the GM is going to be the one that's playing this patron. So mm-hmm. I like the idea of just from the jump having them involved in that process
mm-hmm.
if they want to be.
That is, and that is good, because I think like you said, it's good to have them involved at the beginning and not just, I feel like a lot of people get really upset about the idea of like getting handed a 10-page backstory, and some people get weird about it. But I the GM being involved is a fun idea. But what do you think about like the sort of like pre-game idea of like, I played my little game. Here's my character. And then like, do you foresee like an O Goddess Mind for clerics?
I mean, me, I love it.
Megan's like, TM, cut this out.
Yeah. Like it's one of my favorite things to do, and it's something that I've done as a player, because I always find it more fun to sit down and play a game about it than to just like sit down and write. Like I've played and I'm a big fan of anthology play and like using multiple games to tell one continuous story. But like one of my favorite things that I've done with a friend of mine is we were playing in like a 2-shot, 3-shot, like mini campaign thing. And we knew going into it that our characters were exes. So we played Starcrossed before the game to play out their relationship rather than just sitting there and saying, all right, well, like, what if like when they like, this is how they met. And like, this is how like, blah, blah. Like we just sat down for 2 hours and played a game of Starcrossed. And then you enter into that game with so much more backstory than you could have made just from going back and forth and being like, well, I think it'd be fun if XYZ. So, like, or games where you've, like, I've done where, like, we've played, like, the big one is usually The Quiet Year, to, like, create a world leaning into a larger game. And I just, I love the idea of using games to set up for games. Like, it's so, and there are so many amazing short form, like, indie games out there that are perfect for character building, for relationship building, for world building. And I wanted O Patron Mind to feel like that. Like, I wanted it to be something where somebody could go, well, this is the kind of character that I want to play, and I have the perfect game to help me solidify my backstory. So I always encourage folks to play more games, period, but also play more games within your games, because if there's a game that does what you are trying to do, like, especially as a big proponent for anthology play, like, if you're playing a game and you're entering into, like, a story beat or an arc or whatever, that the main game you're playing isn't the most conducive to what you're trying to do, but there is a game that exists that does what you want to do perfectly. Mm-hmm. There's no rules that say you can't just go play another game for 3 sessions and then go back to your, like, I'm a big proponent of doing what the story wants rather than what the game wants. And I think playing games to lead into games is a big part of that, is what story do you want to tell, and what does the story need, and what does the story want? And then going with that rather than, well, the mechanics of the game have decided that we can only do this. It's like, well, other games exist that will do exactly what you want.
Game's not the boss of me.
Yeah. The game is not the boss of you. You are the boss of the game.
Yeah.
And you can break it as you see fit. And that is my hottest take.
We have a lot of hot takes this episode.
Make the game work for you.
Yeah.
Make the game tell the story you want to tell. The game doesn't determine the story you tell. You determine the story you tell.
I think a lot of people have what I'll call a complicated relationship with, like, rules of games, because I think people view them too often as like a holy text where it's like, no, it's immutable. We can't change it at all.
There are no cops in the room.
Yeah. And like you said, like, if there's another game that handles the story thing that you're trying to resolve, just go do that. Like, if that's what's interesting. One of my favorite actual play podcast friends at the table, quick plug, does that all the time.
Yeah.
They will do a side story in a different game. They'll do a finale arc in a different game. They were doing the finale for one of their campaigns. And
yes, I've only listened to 2 of their campaigns, but I know Mary Eldo was the first one that I listened to, and their precursor game to set that up was like,
Mary Eldo is the big one. I tell people to check out to see if you like it.
Yeah. Mary Eldo, and then Counterweight was the other one that I listened to.
Counterweight is very tricky to listen to now. It's early on, and it's very rough in terms of them, in terms of, like, their vision and their handle on it. Like, even they say it, and so it's tricky to tell people to go back and listen to it, but good for you. It's good. Yeah. I liked Counterweight.
I did too. My thing is, I'm like, what Friends at the Table do is absolutely brilliant. I don't think I'm smart enough to listen to Friends at the Table, is what I feel. Like, everything I've listened to of theirs is brilliant, but what was I listening to? The arc I listened to after Counterweight, I'm like, I am not smart enough to fully appreciate what this is.
I always need, like, show notes, like links to like recommended readings, so here's what we were talking about.
Brilliant and on a whole other level than what a lot of people in the space are doing, and I commend them, but just like sometimes I'm just a little too dumb.
Now listen, don't say that about my friend Megan. They're a very wonderful person. I'm not gonna handle any negative self-talk here. What was I getting at? One of their finales, I forget what game it was, but it was a sort of prompt based game. It was a card based game, and it was like you flip these cards and you see what happens, and they flip the card and they got like the wildest result. It was like, yeah, go change the state in which you're playing the game. Like if you're playing at your house, like go play outside, go play at the beach, like go like fundamentally change the way you're playing the game. And they win.
I need to know what game that is, because that is a mechanic
where I will look it up. Go,
oh, I wish I had thought of that.
Yeah, I'll look it up before we finish. Remind me. But what they decided, because it actually came up twice, which is really funny. What they decided is we'll just play a completely different game. We have to fundamentally change the state of the game. Okay, we'll play a completely different game. And I was like, the best to do it. So smart. What a great way.
That is so good.
Just like, no, what? Different. We'll just blow it up. It's completely different. It's a third game now.
Yeah, a secret third thing.
Yep, the secret third game.
I love that.
It was great. Yeah, I was screaming about it as someone who loves seeing different games and mm-hmm. like I adore the fact that they will play different stuff. Their last couple campaigns, they did what they call the Road to games, where it's like, here's us establishing history and characters and stuff, and every game is a different game.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's so cool. And it's great to just be like, here's a different game that you get to be exposed to, if nothing else. And it's like, mm-hmm. oh, sick. What's this game about? You were talking about anthology games. I have this idea mm-hmm. I keep kicking around. I made a itch collection. So it's real enough. It's an idea I've been kicking around called the Bespoke D&D game. And what I want to do is figure out an anthology of games that are the arc of a D&D campaign, but never once uses D&D. And so it's just a weird collection of indie games
mm-hmm.
that you just play in order. And it's like, yeah, this is the rise and fall and resolution of a D&D campaign, but all through weird little D&D games or weird little indie TTRPGs.
Have you listened to Game Woven at all?
No, I haven't heard of them.
Love them.
I'm going to write it down.
Good friends of mine. So basically what they are doing is they are creating a world using different indie games. Like they are creating like the lore of a world.
Mm.
And like it's like creating cities and towns and gods. Like they're creating a world whole cloth using like piecemeal using different indie games, and it's so my jar of jam.
That sounds great.
It's really, really cool. The folks that do it are fantastic, and I'm not just saying that because they've played three of my games.
but it was cool, like, and then they played some of my stuff.
Like, so it's that kind of thing. And like I know like friends of mine, we had a longish running it started as a Monster of the Week game. But what we ended up doing was we only played Monster of the Week like every three sessions. Like we played, what did we play? We played Anomaly. We played Sleepaway. Mm. We played a bunch, like any cool, like spooky investigative game, pretty much. Like we spliced, like the Monster of the Week bits mm-hmm. were more of like your slice of life, for lack of a better term, like revisiting of it. And then we played all of these other games as like things they were going and like investigating, and that was so much fun because pretty much like we swap, like we played a lot of GM-less games, but like we would swap who GM'd.
That's like, a great idea too.
And there was a group of six of us, so it would be like we would take turns picking what game we played next, and And it was just really cool because we started playing it like from them as kids, because I wanted to play Monster of the Week like a pup named Scooby-Doo.
Oh, God.
And we like, and as we played, like, it was like, all right, the next campaign, like they're in middle school, then they're in high school, then they're like, so we like grew with them into like this big anthology play. That's and it great. Was really cool. And I think more people should play anthology play because it's so much fun and you get to play so many different kinds of games. Like I really want to do like a space anthology play because I have so many really cool like one shot space games. But yeah,
play more games
in your games.
There's so many games.
Yo, dog, I heard you liked games, so I put games in your game so you could game while you game.
I love the idea of like in the middle of someone just playing their normal, let's be honest, boring 5e campaign, that their wild magic effect is, hang on, we all have to stop playing D&D because I rolled double nines, and that means we all have to play Monster Hearts for a little bit. We're all transported to this alternate universe where we're all monsters, and we have to play Monster Hearts. That's so funny to me.
Now I'm going to make a new wild magic chart that's just a list of different games. And if something happens, you have to roll on your wild magic chart and then play whatever game comes up for a session.
It's a very silly idea.
I need to write this down.
TM. Yeah, this one cut out. This one, you made the joke earlier. This one's real.
TM. I'll put this right. I have a notepad that I write my nonsense game design ideas on. The one that's on there right now is a game that you play with a house of by building a house of cards.
Sure.
I don't know what else it does. It just says house of cards game.
That's great. That's game design, baby.
That is game design.
You know, Stephen King doesn't sit down at the typewriter and just bang out a novel in one go. He's got a weird bunch of post-it notes where he writes evil dog and he just sticks it there. And then 6 months he goes, evil dog. That was an idea. Hang on.
Let me tell you about post-it notes. Let me see. I have three of them.
We're getting into real design stuff now.
Real design stuff. So I can't find the other one. It's somewhere in this little drawer. I have a post-it. So these are years old and I'm waiting for them to come to fruition. I have one that says whale ghosts. I have one that says moth disco. And then I have another one that I cannot find, but I know it exists, that just says space fire.
Okay.
Eventually those will be something.
God, moth disco is amazing.
This is game design, baby.
That's it.
Two word post-it notes scattered about your space.
Yeah.
And eventually, it might be years, it might be days, it might be weeks, it'll probably be years, you will look at that post-it note that says moth disco and you go, I have it now.
I got it. I know exactly what this needs to be.
And then next thing you know, any winning Moth Disco, the TTRPG.
Yep. That's it. I mean, that's how it works.
That's game design. Step one, write two random words on a post-it note. Step two, wait. Step three, profit.
Step three, any.
Yep.
I'm sorry. I'm very taken with Moth Disco. I'm just...
See? Yeah. I don't know what it means. Someday I will.
I'm so excited at the prospect of like sitting here one day in the future and being like, Moth Disco, we did it. It's here.
I think it stemmed from the fact that I think moths would really like disco balls.
Sure.
Because it's so much light.
Yeah.
Like the moths would be so into it. And that's as far as I got. But I'm like, it is something.
Yeah.
So it's worth writing down and keeping for years.
And it might not even be that it's about the moth disco. It might be the moth disco is the seed that the idea builds around. You know, it's the piece of dirt that becomes the pearl.
I'm going to write a fiasco setting.
Hang on now.
That you're all moths at moth disco.
There you go. That's great.
There's always
fiasco.
There.
There's always fiasco.
Oh, there's always money in the banana stand. There's always fiasco.
Oh God, this is great. I love this. This is the best part of the podcast, is when we've been chatting long enough that it's just like, oh yeah, it's chaos time now. It's time to get weird. I love it. Oh, Patreon Mine is on crowdfunding. We talked about it a couple times. So this is more of a leading question than any great revelation. What is sort of your vibe with using crowdfunding? I noticed on the Patreon Mine page, the game is done. This is just let's get it printed, let's get it out there, let's get everybody paid. A very important part of the process.
The most important part is paying people for their work.
Yes.
So for me, as a indie game studio of one, crowdfunding is the best way for me to get physical versions of my games. Mm. Generally speaking, I just post them on Itch, which is fine. But every so often, like one game, like a game comes around that I'm like, I just want this one to be a physical thing. Mm. And to make something ready to become a physical thing, you need editing, and sometimes you need layout. If I didn't do the layout myself, which this time I did not, you need cover art, you need to print it, you need a lot of stuff that I just cannot put up in front and hope that people will buy enough to recoup what I have put into it. So crowdfunding for me is just the easiest way to not bankrupt myself while making my games physical media. And it also allows me to pay the folks that worked on the game what I think they deserve to be paid. Because everyone deserves to be fairly compensated for the work that they do. So this one in particular, like, the game is done. It's ready to go to print. It has gone to print once. I've got my couple copies. So the turnaround on the Kickstarter is going to be really quick, which I also think benefits the backers, because they don't have to wait months and months and months to get something. I'm hopefully gonna have it turned around within like a month or two. But really for me, it just is because I'm one person who does this as something on the side, that I don't have the money to put in a lot of money up front to make games happen in a printable, publishable, polished way. I can make them and lay them out myself and put them on Itch for free, which is great. And I love Itch as a platform. It's been huge for me. But just the amount of capital you need to start printing and shipping physical media is terrifying. So crowdfunding is a huge help to both know that people want the thing that you're trying to spend money to print and create, and allows you to have the funding up front to get people paid to get things printed. So I think, like, twofold, like, money is always the big thing, but for me, doing things on Kickstarter or crowdfunding in general, is it allows you to gauge the interest of people. Like, it lets me see, like, oh, 100 some odd people want this game. Whereas if I were to just print 100 copies myself and post them, like post about it on Blue Sky and put it up in on my Itch or in my coffee shop or things like that, like, it would probably take me a while to get 100 some odd people to purchase those copies. Mm. So it's helpful in two ways: to find an audience for them that are willing to buy your thing, and then get the money to get it made. Because game design is free. Everything else about making a game is very much not free. Everything I do is free. Everything else is very much not free.
It feels very self-deprecating to be like, everything I do has no money attached to it, and then everyone else.
I mean, I do make sure, now that I'm on my fourth Kickstarter, I have been making sure I paid myself. Because the first two that I did, I didn't take that into account at all. I'm like, I just want to pay my people and I want to print it. And then I'm like, I did all of this work and the benefit is me having like a piece of physical media. But now I'm like, all right, I got to pay myself for what I'm doing. But generally, to start, what I'm doing doesn't cost anything. I would do it anyway.
I wrote down Moth Disco on this post-it note, and that's $5. So,
yep. Like, so yeah, making games is expensive. If you want to pay people right, which everybody who is making games should want to pay people right.
Mm.
Period.
Well, that brings me back to a thing I wanted to mention, and we drifted away talking about generative AI. You know, you were talking about it as a designer, and you know, as a person that's creating a thing, and as a person who is not a designer, but is very, you know, but is excited about, you know, works and all of this, kind of the end result. I cannot imagine for one second being excited about something that someone used generative AI to create.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it is a thing that from the very sort of inception, and since it's been more prevalent, I've always been just like, oh no. No, I'm okay. I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, you know, and there's of course a larger conversation about the difference between generative AI and large language models and all of this and this, that, and the other. And that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is people using, you know, planet destroying thief engines to avoid
paying artists,
right? To avoid paying an artist. And there's a lot of conversations you can have around the cost of that. I feel like every other month for a little bit, there was some guy, and he was always a guy, complaining that like, well, I do this, I work all these jobs and I do this on the side, and you expect me to have money for art? Like, you're gatekeeping. Yes. Why are you and it's just like, hey dog, you can just not have art. Also, you just, like, yeah, yeah, like, one, like, yes,
I don't have art.
I do.
In a lot of, like, yeah, like, I don't, so many of my games I make with free license images,
mm-hmm,
like, and things like that. Like art comes into the picture, like, when I know that I want to like produce something physically. And then that's where crowdfunding comes in, where I'm like, all right, I can go to all of the artists and say, how much, like, what are your rates for this? And then I can build that into a budget for a crowdfunding. And then, like, there's nothing wrong with, if an artist tells you their rates and you can't afford them, you just say, that's out of my budget, thank you for your time. Mm-hmm. Like, it does not mean that what they do isn't worth what they're charging just mm-hmm because you can't afford it, because artists are also trying to eat and have right a place to live. So, like, art is a luxury product. Like, any form of art is a luxury, and it should be treated like one, and it should be paid for like one, because artists are incredible. Like, and as a creator, like, I get so much joy in getting to support artists. Like, that brings me a lot of joy to be able to go to an artist that I admire and be like, can I please pay you to do something for me? Like, that makes me really happy.
You're the second person to frame it exactly like that. And I adore that, of just like, can I please, may I please have one?
I would like one art, please. Here are money.
Just a bunch of like bills overflow in your hands. Like, yeah, one art, one please. Art.
And that's what you should want.
Yeah. It just it drives me up a wall.
It boggles the mind.
And there's the two sides of it. It's the people who are tone deaf and are just like, well, what, you expect me to pay for art for my thing? Yes, I do.
Yes.
And then the people who are consuming that are just like, oh, it's whatever. It's fine. whatever. And I'm just like, no. Like, no. why would you think that this is acceptable? Like, mm-hmm. like as a creator, why would you find this acceptable? And then as a consumer, as a person who paid money for this.
Well, because yeah, it's like if you don't, why would you put the effort in to consume something that somebody didn't even put in any effort in to create it?
Yeah.
Like they obviously didn't care enough to do it right. So why would you spend your time and money and energy in consuming something that the creator didn't even care enough to actually create it?
I would have an immense amount of respect for someone who was a game designer and who said, hey, this is my game. There's no art in it because I can't afford art. Mm-hmm. I would like to add art, and any sales from this will go to adding art, and I will improve it in the future. And I would be like, that's amazing. That's incredible.
And there are game designers who do that. Like itch funding is a huge thing where somebody will be like, here is the ash can. Like here is just the text mm-hmm. of this game. And I want to pay somebody to lay it out and do art for it. But here is this thing as a proof of a thing that exists that I made. And if you want to see a prettier version of it, buy it as it is now, and you will get the pretty version once we raise enough money to hire somebody to do it.
Like I respect that so much.
And I think that largely the indie TTRPG community and indie TTRPG audience gets that in a way that I think like a larger TTRPG space doesn't, like the people who solely play like your D&Ds, your Pathfinders, like your really big games from these corporations that can afford to do XYZ. But like when you have an audience that understands that like you are one person wearing all of these hats to make this game, people are so much more understanding when it's not publish ready, like when it's not perfect and filled with custom art and stuff. Like I care more about what the words on the page are. Like, because that's the game. Like, to go back to, I mentioned Anomaly earlier, one of my favorite games I've ever played, and like it's a text document. Like there is very little, like when I purchased it, there was very little layout beyond just like the words laid out on a page. And it's such a fun game because that's the game. Like the art is pretty and draws your eye in, but like what makes the game a game is the text of the game. And I think indie creators especially, but like people who spend a lot of time playing indie games get that. That like nobody in the indie space is expecting an indie creator to like make something like a player's handbook level art, blah blah blah. Like you can't expect that from one person who's doing it likely in their spare time.
And I think that's but I think that's why some people turn to using generative AI, because they're like, oh look, I can make something that looks like that, boom, done. And it's like, okay, but
yeah,
it looks like garbage. it looks like a garbage version of that.
Yeah. And I guess from like, yeah, like I could do that to make this guy over here want to play my game, but I don't want that. Maybe I don't want him to like, if that's what it takes to make those like certain people want to play your game, I don't want them playing my game. Like that's not the audience I want. Like I want the audience of people who understand and appreciate indie creations like for what they are, knowing what resources the designer had. Like yeah, there's no play, like yeah, if I see AI art on my anything, I'm like, you're blocked, goodbye. You no longer exist. Like I the world is literally on fire and you just drained a lake to make a shitty picture of a person with six fingers. Like, what are you doing?
it bothers me so much that like Drive-Thru and Itch are making space for these things. That like,
yeah,
that they can't,
like, I, yeah,
they can't be bothered to just say no.
No.
Just
like, I put a little thingy on my main Itch page that's like, all of my games are made by me, a human, with an immense amount of hate for generative AI. Like, just so we're clear.
These games are made with hatred for this.
Yeah, not only are they made by a human, they are made by a human fueled with hatred for people who use AI. Like,
I love it. That's what those should say. It shouldn't just say made by a human. It should made by a human full of hatred.
Full of hatred. That's the special sauce. Hatred. Some people make things with love. Nope, you just gotta make it with spite.
Literally, a thing that's come up every time is how, if you need spite to get it done, let spite fuel you. Let it happen.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's no better reason to make a thing than for the ability to go, fuck you. That's it. Yeah.
Look at this.
I couldn't do it. Fuck you. There it is. Look at it. 200% funded. Fuck you. That's great. That's it.
It's a powerful motivator.
So many moments of great art, I imagine, were driven by spite.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. I've seen some people talk about, like, you know, don't let spite be your motivator. And I'm like, well, don't let spite fuel everything. Don't let spite fuel everything you do. But like, if you need it to get the last like 10-20% of a project, you know, like if you're chugging along, then you hit a little spot. Fuck you is the best reason. Mm-hmm. Let that, you know, carry you to the finish line.
You won't. You say, fuck you, I will.
Yeah. And put your head down, you get it done.
Exactly.
I love it. So Megan, this has been wonderful. We're gonna go to our last question here. Okay. I don't want to take up your whole day. I want you to play Veilguard as much as you want to play Veilguard.
Well, and in less fun terms, my husband is dying to snowblow the driveway, and I'm like, you cannot snowblow the driveway until I am done. So now I hear him outside shoveling the front walk, because that does not require snowblowing.
I love the description that he is dying to snowblow.
Well, because
like he's just like, come on.
Well, he got up and started getting ready at 11:05. I'm like, you're not going to snowblow. And he's like, yeah, I am. I'm like, no, you're not. Like, I got things. Well, it's mostly because it's raining, so the snow's getting heavier. And he's like, I just got to get it blown.
That's fair. It's so funny. Him just pacing in front of the door like a dog, just
like a caged animal.
I got to do it. That's funny. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Megan's husband. We're almost done. But so this is the last question. This is my three question. The first episode I asked a like top three question as just a goof to end the show. And I loved it.
Love
and
this.
So we do it all the time.
I'm historically indecisive, so this will be great. You'll ask me for a top three and I'll give you a top five.
You know, listen, the thing that I've said to people is the best way to answer this question is to break the rules and give me the answer I didn't ask for. So I come up with it during the show. I don't have it written down. Megan, what are your, this is a curveball. What are your top three solo games?
Oh, okay.
Now we go to Itch and we,
well, I'll say. Well, now my girlfriend is like, I was going to go help Dave with the snow. Are you almost done? I'm like, don't you come out about the snow.
Everybody relax.
Everybody. It's like the office meme, the shut up about the sun. Just shut up the snow. Actually, I'm not even going to go to my itch. I'm going to go to my zine.
I'm going to go to my library. I'm going to get these physical books.
Well, yeah, I've.
Oh my gosh!
A whole bookshelf. These are just my zines.
I need to see. This is as we're cleaning
physical media.
We're cleaning up our bookshelves, and we're sorting out, like, you know, my books versus her books versus game books and that sort of thing. And I'm like, I need a little storage solution, something for zines. I need, I've two different zines that are just in a out envelope. So like, I need something.
Yeah. So I just have like, it's just like a little metal bin.
That's and it fun fits though.
On the shelf. Number one, The Wretched.
Good.
By Chris Bissett. This Good is answer. The first game that I was like, oh, solo games are a thing that exist. It is so good. I've written two Wretched and Alone games using the SRD for The Wretched, which is also really great. So The Wretched, number one. Number one, now I'm gonna keep going.
We're definitely gonna get at least five. I'm emotionally prepared for some sort of rule bending that means you include five, but somehow tell me it's three.
Those are all my games in the background.
Listen, you can pick your own game. I'm not a cop.
If I were to pick my own game, yeah. I am very proud of it, so I'll still plug it. Oh god, where'd it go?
See, that's technically four.
Sanctuary and Sentinel by me. I love it. It's two solo games.
I don't think it's hubris to say at least one of your top five of a thing should be a thing that you made. It feels like it should be. I don't feel it's bad. Like, it's the thing. One, it's the thing that you made, so you should be proud of it. And two, theoretically, you made it in such a way that it is the best version of that thing to you.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
I think it's fair.
All right. The next one, well, there are also some that I've like played solo that aren't solo games. So I'm like, is this game solo or not? All right, so I have two more. So the other one is Project Echo by Elliot Davis. Where you play a time traveling like agent, but you play it with an old planner.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And I was looking at getting a planner for this.
It is a game that I saw it and read it and was like, I am infuriated that I did not think of this because it's so brilliant.
I do. Yeah. I was thinking about getting a planner specifically for this game.
This is my number three, is The Lighthouse at the Edge of the Universe. Another very small boy, all about being the lighthouse keeper of a lighthouse at the edge of the universe. And you're trying to keep the light lit throughout the night, throughout things that are happening around you. And it actually has in the back of it a little thing that you can cut out and make your own.
That's cute.
Tiny little lighthouse. So this is by Ella Lim. Edited by Tyler Crumrine from Possible Worlds Games, who is a designer that I absolutely adore. So, The Wretched, Project Echo, Lighthouse at the Edge of the Universe, honorable mention to Sanctuary and Sentinel by me.
Which is technically two games, and so technically we got to five.
Two games. It's two games, but it's one one zine.
It's two games, but it's one book, so it counts as one entry, because you couldn't buy them separately, so... It counts.
Not physically.
Walk into a store and just rip it in half. Like, I only just wanted the one, so I'll pay full price, but I just wanted amazing. I'm glad you did exactly the thing that you set out to do, and I respect it, and I appreciate that. I've been annoyed the last couple. I've had like curveball questions and people have been far too ready with answers. And I've been like, this was supposed to be hard. And you were like,
oh, you just need people to pull out a giant bin of zines. Like, I've suddenly forgotten every game that I've ever played.
I asked, I had Lola Johnson on and I asked them what their favorite three exoplanets were. Cause I was like, listen, they'll know them. This isn't this much of a question that they'll be so off track, but I didn't expect them to have like a list and just like, here's my three. This guy, done. And I was like, damn. I gotta try harder, I guess. But all right. We gotta let your husband deal with that snow.
We gotta let the partners deal with the snow.
This has been fantastic. Megan, thank you so much for taking time out of Dragon Age Sunday to chat with me.
Big sacrifice, but willing, more than willing to do it.
Once again, I'm sure I said it in the intro, but all the links to everything, or links to everything we talked about, will be in the show notes. So any games you mentioned, anything like that, will be linked down there, as well as all of Megan's stuff, the Kickstarter campaign, socials, website, all that stuff. Megan, I'll give you another little outro just here at the end in case somehow people missed it. But
I have been and will continue to be Megan Cross. You can find me mostly on Blue Sky these days at MeganLynnFTW. You can find all of my games at MeganLynnFTW.itch.io, as well as some physical copies of games on my Ko-fi, ko-fi.com/MeganLynnFTW. Basically, if you want to find me, just type Megan Lynn for the win into Google and click what comes up. It's just going to be me. And you can back up Patreon Mine now through February 28th. If you just go into Kickstarter and Patreon Mine, that's just the letter Patreon Mine.
I love it. I did appreciate on your website, each of your pages, most of your pages had different pictures of you, which was very funny. I just appreciated this is different.
To know what I look like.
These are different. And I appreciate the attention to detail.
Thank you.
But no, Megan, thank you so much. This is where we're going to leave off. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
And that's it. Another episode of What You Doin' Podcast. Come and gone. I want to thank Megan again so much for sitting down with me. It's always such a pleasure to sit down and spend time chatting with people about their amazing stuff. Like I say it every time, but honestly, every time it is such a delight, such a treat. As I'm sure I said multiple times, the links to everything will be in the show notes if you want to check out Megan's itch, Megan's website, where you can get O Patron Mine or any of her other games. While you're there, check out all the links to the show. Find us on YouTube if you want to watch the video version of this. Go to Patreon and give me money to help pay for the hosting. Was that a little too direct? Maybe it was, but sometimes directness is positive. You can also find the show on Blue Sky and Instagram, so you can see the times that I remember that I made an Instagram. I'm sorry for how long this episode took to get out. It's a lot of people are excited to be on the show. This is a good problem to have, but I need to get better about managing my time and getting all of these projects done in a reasonable time frame. So thank you to everybody that's been patient while I work through these episodes. As always, I want to thank everybody for listening, for reviewing the show, for checking it out, for telling your friends any of the stuff. It's amazing. It's incredible that anybody listens to this. People have been telling me they like it. It's so cool. So thank you. I'm going to get this episode finished up and firing off and then playing some Monster Hunter Wilds. So I'll see you all in the next one.